Y'all just want to introduce yourself and like describe Reasion, like more specifically, like what is your mandate or vision? How often do you publish and like basic information like that?
Okay, yeah. So my name is Michael Stewart. I am a recent grad, living in New York City now. I am, I guess, a new editor, and I guess for ReAsian itself, it's a Canadian and US-based online platform. We do plan on doing a print platform in the future. We just have to work toward it. But basically, our mission is to highlight the voices of Asian identifying people living in the US and Canada,
Right.
along the lines of the bias for us kind of notion of Asian identified people creating content for Asian identifying people, and like creating our own space and filling it with critical and political writings, kind of, looking at our history and culture and community in a celebratory way, but also looking at it critically and seeing the issues that we can tackle in that sense.
Right.
Elise, if you want to add anything to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I guess in terms of publishing, right now we're kind of slowly relaunching from what ReAsian used to be, which is Yell and Noise. We are not sure how often they publish, but our goal at the moment is kind of a month or once a week for now. In the future, hopefully it'll expand into something bigger or we'll be publishing more frequently.
Right. Thank you very much. Do you mind elaborating on, you mentioned Yellow Noise. So what was the, can you comment on the decision to relaunch? Maybe like what's changed and what hasn't?
Sure. So the main thing is the name change. I guess for the new editors who got involved, we didn't really feel like yellow was something that we identified with. I thought that Yellow Noise was like a really catchy name, but it definitely implies like reclaiming of specifically East Asianness, at least like in the way I understand it. And I can see like why it would be called yellow with a history behind it, but I didn't really feel included in the words Yellow Noise. So I guess changing the name and then also like redefining the platform and how it can be used just also allows us to redefine like identity or like a Pan-Asian identity as like something more expansive and inclusive.
Right.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, I mean, including more South Asian, Southeast Asian, even, West Asian folks on the platform, and kind of working toward ensuring that their voices are also heard within the whole Pan-Asian identity is, yeah, like Elise said it already, but we really want to try to look toward being more inclusive in that way.
Right. I'm interested in the decision to kind of specifically name West Asians as like a category of like identities that you would want to include in ReAsian because from my like correct me if I'm wrong, but to my knowledge, like West Asia is primarily like kind of like more often grouped together with like North Africa because it's the Middle East.
Middle East, yeah.
So yeah, I'm wondering what made you decide to highlight this category in ReAsian.
I guess that part does get a little wishy-washy in the sense of how people identify exactly. But I guess me personally, it was kind of geographically, if what we look at is Asia, but then it's also how politically and historically people have looked at Asia, and I guess maybe even the term Orientalism in that sense, that does include West Asia in that area or space. So,
Yes.
and that idea, we would, if we did receive submissions from people that identify as West Asian, we would love to work with them and work to publish their work on our site.
Right.
Exactly. It just goes hand in hand with trying to be as like expansive and like redefining how we understand what people would identify with when they say that they're Asian.
Right. Thank you so much. So, yeah, on that note, do you see ReAsian having a role in negotiating the position of Asian folks in relation to other people of color? Because it is often thought and is a real fact that, like, Asian folks are privileged in relation to specifically Black and Indigenous folks. So what do you think is ReAsian's role in kind of navigating that?
I guess it's about, as Asian people in the diaspora, addressing and defining, like, what our role as settlers is on Indigenous territory and, like, how to show solidarity with Black resistance as well. And these are kind of just also generally other people of color and, like, race-related issues and how those issues are intersectional, particularly with model minority tropes. It's about, in terms of the publication, creating dialogue on these issues, kind of like from the perspective of youth in the diaspora,
right.
Which is like a huge goal, and like giving them space for however people might be like negotiating or expressing the way they feel or deal with these issues.
I guess in the climate that we're in, you know, there's been a lot of talk within Asian communities about what is our role within white supremacy and, you know, upholding it with anti-Blackness within our own community. So how do we explore that as well essential to, you know, really get into the idea of solidarity work and what does that look like and finding our own place within, you know, the real like formations of America or the United States and Canada and those histories.
Yeah.
And present day moments.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think are the most important issues that Asian people are facing right now, especially like Asian people in the diaspora? How do you see them addressed in your publication?
I guess to reiterate, just like, seeing ourselves as settlers on Indigenous land, that's like one huge thing, how we might be perpetuating anti-Blackness, but also realizing like what our internal issues are, like, such as how we deal with class and race. A huge one, I think, while living in Vancouver is, like, there are, like, different immigration waves of, like, Asian settlers and then a lot of division within those. I think the main divider is, like, class. But,
right.
Yeah. Did you have any issues that you think of,
yeah,
Michael?
Along the lines of, I guess anti-Blackness and maybe how, you know, New York City had the Akai Gurley case with Peter Liang,
right.
With those Chinese Americans coming out and police brutality, and then the letter that was crowdsourced, which, you know, things like that, kind of showing that how does that solidarity work look like, and also mass incarceration, and that complex that's happening. Also, I guess LGBTQ legislation that's coming through with the pipe, and the big thing with xenophobia and anti-Muslim violence. Definitely living in the United States and staring down a Trump presidency, these are things that we hope our publication can help talk about and really start dialogue between people and, you know, have that community where people can come to and look at the site and, you know, see other youth talking about it and how they, you know, see things, and just by reading it, how, you know, seeing by themselves or sitting with a group or, you know, discussing within a group, how that can lead to maybe inspiration for them to go out and do the work.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, so my next question is about Asian writers and artists in media. What obstacles do you think they're facing? Why is creating content important generally? And what do you think are some of the themes that they're tackling right now?
Okay. For Asian writers and artists or like figures in the media, the main obstacle, aside from like even getting a foot in the door, is that they
Right.
have a sense of like responsibility to tell stories accurately if they're going to be telling stories about being Asian. And I think there's like a huge kind of like, yeah, responsibility again to like have a generally satisfying representation in the mainstream without trying to play to stereotypes or like dull it down for a white media or a white audience. I notice that Generation X and like anyone older struggled getting into positions where they were visible in the media. And you can see how like they have internalized a lot, and I'm really critical of the roles they played. Just because they're trying to be acceptable for white media, but I'm not saying it's a lot better now. It's just something people are more aware of, and why we even have representations like Fresh Off the Boat, which actually like resonate with a lot of people. And it's not like they should be received without criticism. It's just we're like moving in a direction where you're starting to see like the responsibility being more important.
I'm wondering if you envision kind of Re:Asian being or having a role in kind of facilitating a dialogue between kind of between like youth and like older generations. Because while I'm speaking from personal experience, I know that many folks who are second generation immigrants, for example, have kind of this cultural kind of barrier between them and the rest of their families, their parents, their grandparents. I'm wondering if kind of Re:Asian has a vision for kind of facilitating that channel of communication between youth and their elders, basically.
Definitely. For me, I'm second generation, and like, yeah, there's just this epidemic where you don't relate with your parents or your grandparents or your relatives to like a satisfying level. So it's pretty important. I think that focusing youth on the platform is just like to have an outlet of expression, but like, on the other hand, like I also want to have those like expressive outlets be used to bridge generational gaps. And like, yeah, that's kind of like why youth creating the content is so important. And like, even if, say, like my parents didn't agree with the content that was on there, they could at least be exposed to it and like reflect on the experiences being shared. And hopefully, like, yeah, reflecting on like I would consider a certain worldview.
Yeah, definitely. I think getting people to the other generation just to see like this raw form of expression is important, just because a lot of times I feel like we change the way we talk to our parents. Well, maybe this is just what I do sometimes, but it's kind of just like, I talk a certain way around my parents not to upset the status quo and things like that, but through, raw expression or things like that, maybe, people become more confident within like what they personally have to say and, can hold their own space in, a more, I guess, a newfound courage or and something like that. I read an article a couple days ago about how, even I think it was a Chinese American family went to see the movie Hidden Figures, and the daughter writes about how going to see it with her parents really opened up her parents' eye about, like the discrimination that was faced, that these women faced while in NASA and things like that. And it took, someone being exposed to that just in a different, maybe like a newer way than they saw before, to just start asking those questions, like Elise said, oh, it was really like that back then, or like, oh, is this what you think about this? Or even like the letter that was crowdsourced, Asians for Black Lives. There was a great NPR code switch that was talked about, this generation gap between this Vietnamese American family. So it's really just about getting the stories out there, which is very powerful, and I think that can lead to a lot of change.
Great. So
Yeah.
oh, sorry, do you have anything to add, Elise?
I guess like I have one more thing, like I guess another thing with like it being youth, publishing, I think a lot of people don't necessarily feel safe sharing these kinds of feelings or thoughts with their parents at this point. Mm-hmm. But like, again, being able to express themselves is just really important. And I guess fostering like safeness and like inclusivity on that online platform is huge for us.
Because I think I'm out of questions. Do you folks have anything else you would like to say in regards to your reaction? Like, what do you want potential, like, people who submit to know, maybe?
So right now we're having a call out for submissions this month around the theme of first, since this is our first, I guess, month of, you know, after relaunching and things like that, we love the idea of first. A lot of times, you know, we have these moments in our lives that stay with us, or, you know, even the idea of first, or, you know, is that the first time, but is the first time the last time, or is it, you know, what does that mean to you? It can be something serious, like the first microaggression you felt, or the first time you felt racialized within white supremacist society, or you know, something fun like first time you had this certain type of food, or you know, the first what else is there? First pair of shoes you bought, I don't know, things like that. Or,
yeah, right.
You know, first time you felt beautiful, stuff like that. So along all the spectrums, we just want, you know, people to really, you know, have fun with it, or be serious with it and be critical, or, you know, just a space like how you want to express a first that you felt, and just share that with us. And, you know, we would love to work with anyone that wants to submit. We're welcome, as long as it's on along the lines of the theme of first.
Right.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We have an Instagram and a Facebook page, so check us out on at Reagent Mag. Reagent Mag, it's one word, on both Facebook and Instagram. Just wanted to get that in there.
And Twitter.
Sorry. On Twitter. Oh. We have Twitter, too. I forgot about Twitter.
We do. We have
same
a Twitter.
Yeah. Sorry about forgetting that one, but we're on three platforms along with our website.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. Thank you folks so much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you. Have a good rest of the day.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. You as well.
You too. Thank you.